How's it going, everybody? I am going to be discussing Ghostbusters Afterlife today. Now, Ghostbusters Afterlife is a very Hollywood movie, but it's also not a very Hollywood movie. I think the key difference between a very Hollywood movie and not a very Hollywood is I think I kind of like it. Like, that might just be the only difference. However, I will get into them. Enjoy the ad. Ghostbusters Afterlife is set, I want to say 30 years after, no, not 30 years, but it's 2021, from 1984, would be 37 years after, so almost 40 years later, Jesus Christ. Forgetting the 80s weren't... Time marches on. Okay. The movie follows a single mom who, her and her two kids are going to a new town that their grandfather had a place in because they're broke, they're evicted. I forget the mom's name, but played pretty damn good. Then you have Phoebe, who I believe is played by Grace McKenna, who is excellent in this movie. The brother, who's played by Finn Wolfhard. I'll get into that later, but they go to this town in Somerville in Oklahoma, which is pretty much the opposite of New York. Like, the first two movies were very New York. This movie is ghosts in a small town, and I'm going to say right off the bat, like, because I was talking about how Hollywood this movie is, the original Ghostbusters was, like, a very different concept than the film that we got. You had Dan Aykroyd, who throws the kitchen sink when it comes to paranormal. He's an incredible world builder as a writer and director. Then you have Harold Ramis, who passed away, but also acted in, and also, I'll get to that too. He was a very big part. Like, Ghostbusters was three of the greatest comedic minds, because Bill Murray is, like, one of those great comedic actors that it just, like, whenever he does something, it's worthwhile. And I know Bill Murray was dragging his ass on a Ghostbusters sequel for the longest time. But I think he warmed up to it as time went on, and I think I'm not gonna spend any time trashing the Ghostbusters reboot because this movie pretty much does a similar thing, but it, like I said, it does it in Hollywood, but it's a soft reboot. And the thing that will annoy people here is that if you saw the original Ghostbusters and you saw this movie, you would be like, oh, all the same things are inside this movie. But it's, this movie is different enough and it has different things going on that those things are more, hey, if you're a fan of the original, remember this? Like, here's the nostalgia factor, but also, this movie is about a family coming together. And the it doesn't have, like, the zaniness. It doesn't have the, like, it has, like, similar, this movie is about discovery, whereas the original was, we're busting ghosts, and turns out the apocalypse is happening, thank God we're here. So this movie is about, it's very much connected to the first one because, the villain is the same. I kind of wish they had, changed it up a little bit, but, the third act comes into a CG fest, which, by the way, not bad. There is enough practical, effects in this movie that, it was really good. Now, I know I've been rambling for the last, 5 minutes, but, I'm just gonna go through, those that, are interested, this is a spoiler-filled podcast, so anything past this point, sorry, I should have told you beforehand, but, spoilers, and I'm gonna spoil this, I'm gonna spoil that, and then spoil this in two, spoil everything, one. They deal with the death of Harold Ramis right off the bat. They use a stand-in. They never show his face. They never hear his voice. But the only time that you see Harold Ramis, Egon Spengler, speak is when they use the old footage of, like the stuff they put it on YouTube, they turn the footage from the commercial that they shot and the when they go into the building, they use that as footage, and they don't even say his name until about halfway through the movie, so if you, the audience, know, then you are just, like, waiting for them to say it. And, what's interesting is you have, the mom in the story who, like, she is very, like, visibly, like, annoyed and hurt and what have you about, her father leaving her. And then you have, she's bad with money. Her dad was horrendous with money, apparently. Her son is good with cars. He is a good mechanic. And supposedly he's, 15 years old, the movie's consistent about that. It's just that, he's a regular kid, but he's good with cars. He has a Chevy truck, a Chevy shirt on. When the car breaks down on the way to Oklahoma, he's the one fixing it. When he's looking around, he's fixing the Cadillac, the Ghostmobile. So he's good with cars. Other than that, also, he has, my favorite duh moment of the movie. It's like, wow, the capacitor's not working again. So he shoots it with the jetpack and supercharges the whole thing. So It gives them something to do. And like he was just dumb enough to do it. So the granddaughter, on the other hand, Phoebe, which, by the way, if I can remember their names, good job on them. They said their names enough. Like Trevor and Phoebe. Okay, Trevor, plain enough name. Phoebe, plain enough name. Like the way the character works, just like good job. And Phoebe like has that that Egon sense of humor, or tries to have that sense of humor, that personality type. So, and plus the her jokes were just cringe enough, you'll see in the movie, her jokes were just cringe enough that I was like, oh, that's cute. Now, I'm not going to get into, like, my, not annoyance, like, there are certain things that happened regarding the original cast of Ghostbusters that I was like, okay. Having Janine there, okay, like, she has one scene in the beginning and one scene at the end. Like, the one makes sense until you see the other one, and then, I'm gonna save Ernie Hudson's character for the, like, for later, but when you have, like Bill Murray, Venkman, and then Dan Aykroyd's Ray running an occult bookstore. Like, how the hell does that make any money? Especially when, like, the amount of debt that it's kind of established that, and then the level of hauntings, weren't happening. But, so that's why the band broke up. Then, Egon takes everything, goes to Oklahoma, and then, like, he doesn't call, he doesn't do anything. He just takes it all on himself, which I think is okay, for the plot of the movie, it has to go down like that. It's like, it doesn't make sense. Bill Murray, I think, wanted to be in it for two things. I think he wanted a scene with the original cast, which, by the way, there's a moment where it's done very Ghostbuster-y in that it's sort of subtle. When they're all together, it's just like, okay, as a fan, we got that moment that we never got, and we got it as good as we're gonna get it. Sigourney Weaver makes an appearance, which I was happy with, which, by the way, I don't know what the age difference was in 1984, but she is aged beautifully, whereas Bill Murray, not so much, in comparison. But just once you get to the third act of the movie, the amount of callbacks to the original movie is just a lot. I mean, when I said this was a soft reboot, I wasn't kidding, because who's the villain? Gozer. Who's the subplot? Evo Shandling. Or Shander. Basically, the town in Oklahoma that he got the selenium steel beams to make his building, that's like a beacon for Gozer. This is the mine where all that selenium happened, so this town is haunted, sort of. Like, the old mine has a spot where, Gozer's going to appear, and it's not as, sort of weird as the original movie, but it's, there's still some weirdness to it. Now, things that, I really enjoyed about this movie. The action sequences were incredible. There was two. Both of them involved the Ecto-1. You see the one in the trailer, and you see part of the other one and what have you. So, the Stave Puft Marshmallows in Walmart. That scene was perfect because, there were some moments where Paul Rudd, who is pretty good in this movie, who is just a seismologist or a science teacher that I don't know what his exact deal. I know he's a teacher. I don't know his story isn't really explained. He's just trying to figure out why a town with no fault lines and no volcanic activity is having earthquakes, which you would think would be a real news maker, but they blame it on fracking, so I guess that makes sense. So the Walmart's I know that there was practical effects used in this movie, and they were just good enough that I was okay. They established it really well in one scene, so when they mix it together with the CG, it works out pretty good. Now, Gozer, I could have sworn was played by Olivia Wilde, but apparently not. I think her name is Porter, actress, gymnast sort of deal. The stuff with Gozer, the callbacks, even the last, all right, I'm forgetting a couple characters here. There are two characters, one is given a lot of attention, one is not so much. However, all right, I forget her name in the movie, but the sheriff's daughter, Finn Wolfhard's love interest, she is played well. There's no fault. When the four Ghostbusters start riding out together, which, by the way, Egon had all the work suits or whatever inside a locker. Are you telling me that four suits meant for four grown-ass men fit four kids, two of which are girls that are 17 and 13 or whatever? That's what happened? Get the fuck out of here. So then the Hollywoodisms of this movie. So the Ecto-1 in the trailer, you could see that there is a gunner seat on the Ecto-1. Now, I think Red Letter Media pointed this out. And by the way, I have not watched their video on Afterlife. It came out last week. I told myself I am not watching their video on it until I have watched the movie for myself and have my own opinion. So, like, I've been trying to, like, really avoid reviews and spoilers, even though I'm trying to follow more cinema Instagrams. So, they pointed out that there is a toy out there from the original movie where it was, there was a gunner seat on the toy, or at least the toy for the Ecto-1, and like, they were just gonna, like, make the movie as marketable as possible. So, the final act, Gozer comes back. I kind of wish they kept J.K. Simmons around for a little bit longer, because J.K. Simmons plays Evo Shandor, and if they had, like, he was like, we could rule the world together, and she just tears him apart, like, that, that was, like, a satisfying part, but I think it would have been a little bit interesting if, like, they had him walk around for a little bit, because, there was other things that could have been done with Shandor. Back to what I was saying, though, about Logan Kim plays Podcast. Podcast is the equally weird, but different, not as smart. Like, of course this kid's going to be friends with Phoebe. Like, this kid is interested in the occult. He's interested. He's like the miniature Ray, and him and Dan Aykroyd have a great exchange at the end, and like, what I like about this movie is that everybody has a role to play. This is totally a Hollywood soft reboot of a beloved franchise. However, the one I'm going to compare it to, it's better than, which is Force Awakens. Force Awakens was, hey, you remember Star Wars? Hey, you remember all this stuff? Here you go. Like, everything you remember, here it is. This one, it's everything you remember, but we're giving it to you differently. You remember the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man? We're going to have references to it multiple times. Like, hey, in the middle of a farm, for whatever reason, like, we're just going to have, like, the things that were in Walmart that made sense just magically appear. Even though, like, there was, you could have gone a different way. You remember how, like, there was, like, people covered in foam at the end of the first movie? Well, we're going to have a reference to that. It's going to be, shoehorned in, but it's going to make a little bit of sense. Because Force Awakens had problems. They had Finn, and then they had Rey. You're introduced to Finn first, so you think that you're going to get a black Jedi. Then you find out Rey's there, and Rey is, I don't know how to describe, how they handled Rey politely, other than to say she got too strong too fast, and it bit him in the ass for the rest of the movie, because, they didn't kill Poe like they wanted to, because Oscar Isaac was just so good. But so this movie, you get the sense that the story it wanted to tell, it told. Force Awakens was a lot of setup And a lot, like, of course we're going to destroy the evil planet that's going to destroy other planets. Yes. Like, that, like, just that much better. Now, here was one of the issues I had with the movie in terms of logic. So, Ernie Hudson's Winston, after the band broke up, he went off to become a businessman, and he supported Ray's bookstore. He bought the firehouse, and he doesn't know, or he doesn't let anybody know that he did it, other than Annie Potts' character, I believe Janine. So, when Janine appears again with Winston, they're talking about how they've basically been like helping everybody out. Meanwhile, it's like if Janine knew what was going on, it was talking to Egon, or at least that's what I'm guessing. Where was, like, that family support? Like, where was that? So, like, if Egon was, like, I wish they had given Janine more in the beginning of the movie, when she had that one scene. Because I think it would have put things into more context for me to be like, okay, so... Because plot doesn't need to be like the answer to why this happened. Now, Jason. I'm going to talk about the directing. Jason Reitman is the son of Ivan Reitman, and he's been known for more serious movies, like Oscar contenders and whatnot for his entire career. I really hope he comes back for the sequel. I really hope to God he comes back for the sequel, because the way he handles everything, it's the movie is taken seriously. I'm not saying Paul Feig didn't take his movie seriously, but the amount of things that were put into a blender on that one, and the way it was handled, it was like, that one was way more cartoonish in comparison to this one. This one was way more simple and so the movie does not forget about New York. The last stinger for the movie has the stuff going on with New York, and it shows the old firehouse, and it shows the old container, like the old red box, and there's a red light on there, and one of the things that I would be very interested in seeing is in the sequel. You know how things in the 70s and 80s that were a good idea at the time, they got dilapidated. Imagine if they did a Ghostbusters sequel where they treated the old red box as a failing nuclear plant. How do we fix this thing? How do we, like, if obviously something's gonna go wrong, so how do we, like, what happens? So, like, my hope is they, what if I'm just throwing it out there, the thing that was supposed to be a container has festered and something else has come out of there, and what if it's a bridge to the other side, and there's just like a nonstop onslaught of ghosts coming out, and like, I would very much want to see, and it could be, I don't know if the, like, I don't know how it would work, because like Finn Wolfhard and Phoebe could be like the grandchild brigade. They could be the young ones, because don't forget, Oscar's around. They could probably get some famous actor to star as Oscar, the son of Sigourney Weaver. Because he would be in his 30s, maybe 40s. Then you have whatever kids Winston has, maybe whatever kids or whatever students Venkman has. Like, have Dan Aykroyd there to be the... I'm just saying out loud. And plus, this movie could take a while to make, because I think this movie was shot like 3 or 4 years ago. So, like, the Finn Wolfhard will be older. Grace McKenna will be older. Which, by the way... I'm looking forward to seeing what she does. I'm getting Chloe Grace Moretz vibes off of her. So, just like young actress, knows what she's doing. I'm hoping that she has a really good career. I'm really hoping she does, because you could see the talent there. All right, I just blew out my voice talking about Ghostbusters Afterlife. Go see it in theaters. It is... I enjoyed the hell out of it. It's not a perfect movie, but it does have... it's solid. It is a solid movie. Peace.